Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can feel free to call them in either at area code 646-716-4893, or you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And before I announce my special guest for tonight, I'd just like to make a few announcements. First, this is a reminder that we are only weeks away from our healing weekend at the end of September. And I'm just so excited that, you know, it's already the second week of August coming up. And so many women are going to be converging in Philadelphia to make a difference in the healing route that many of us take. So that's the last weekend in September, September 28th and 29th. There's no charge for the seminars and for the weekend, just for your housing and for your food. And the rest is my gift to you every year to try to help you on that road to recovery, because in numbers there is strength and in support there is recovery. When you have to do it by yourself, you always feel very isolated and alone. So it's my greatest joy when I see that women can hook up like our Houston women did. And now they've become friends, and they're having regular meetings, and it's the most wonderful thing on that journey to healing. So September 28th and 29th, there's always room for one more is the way I look at it. You know, I never put a quota on healing. So if you'd like to join us, we have women coming from Australia and also from the United Kingdom, also from Canada, and from points throughout the world, otherwise and in this country. So it will be a really exciting event. Also want to mention that we have our United Kingdom support chat on Mondays at 9 o'clock UK time. If you're in the United Kingdom or Europe and you would like to join me, just drop me a note at bonkay@aol.com. And also I would like to mention that we have our children's support group, Adult Children of Gay Fathers. Also, on my website, I wanted to mention www.gayhusbands.com, which is the way that most of you have found me originally. And I've just updated my website, and if you haven't been there in the last 24, 48 hours, I would appreciate you looking at some of the updated information across the top row of the tabs where I have the different things that you can click into. I now have a specific tab for the children, for our children, to talk about the issues that they're going through that we don't realize. But now that I've been, you know, overseeing this group of adult children, it's just amazing. Amazing to see the things that they're thinking that we have no clue about. So it's really important, you know, we've found ourselves here together, finding support for each other. It's really important to find support for your children. And even if they say to you, "Mom, I'm fine, I don't need support," at least give them, you know, the way to access the information and say, maybe you don't feel that way right now, but if you ever need it, it's there for you, and it's confidential. The mothers are not involved in this. The fathers are not involved in this. It's a totally confidential group. So please make sure they have that access to that information, and you should read it also. It's painful, but I had to be honest. You know how I am, the tough love counselor. I have to tell it as it is, and our children are suffering, and we need to see what we can do to help them. So gayhusbands.com, look under our children. I have some new links on my site also, and I just wanted to mention that so many of you have told me how much you enjoy the show with Mike from Linked Investigations, and so I put up Mike's website on there so you can take a look at it. And Mike has so many good things on his blog, ways to, you know, do some investigation on your own before you have to invest in an investigator. And Mike will be coming back and doing the show quarterly for us, which I'm really excited about because he really is a great guest. And talking about great guests, before I introduce my great guest for tonight, I do want to make sure to tell you that next week we have one of our all-time favorite guests, my dear friend Grace, who really talks about women who have husbands who are those straight gay husbands who will never tell the truth, who will go on and marry somebody else and victimize another woman. And many of you have asked for Grace to return, and she was very gracious, and she will. Also, the following week after that, we have Mary Ann Glynn coming back as a therapist who works with post-traumatic stress. And she has some really good messages for you as well. And, of course, at the end of the month, we always have our own in-house doctor, Dr. Hooper, in the house. So he's someone to look forward to as well. Tonight I'm going to be introducing you to a very special guest who has been here before and who will be coming here on a very regular basis from here on in. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce my dear friend, Suzette Hinton. Suzette, welcome to the show again.
Ah, thank you, Bonnie. I am delighted to be on the show. Delighted.
I'm delighted, too. And, in fact, I just want to say this to you. You know, I was listening to your show the other day because I'm a little backlogged, and I wanted to go back to the beginning, and I heard the beginning of your show. You know, your very first show.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do the same thing on this show as you did on your show. Because I know it's going to make me feel better when I can yell out the yay. Because I just felt that was so good. I've been practicing it all day. So can we do it together?
Yay!
Not yet. Oh, no, not yet. I have to announce it first.
Oh, my yay!
Okay. Suzette is going to be a regular guest on my show every month. You ready now? Let's do it.
Yes!
Yay!
Yay!
I really love that. You know, I really felt it was like I felt so more liberated after I said that. You know, I love just saying that, yay. And I think for those women who are listening, if you try a few yays, and I want Suzette to do it because she does it so much better than me, you're going to feel the same way I've been feeling all day. Go ahead, Suzette, do it again.
Yay!
Oh, I love it. I mean, when I do it, it's like yelling. When you do it, it's like music playing.
Oh.
So I am so excited that you're going to be with us because we have a long history together. And, you know, it's been a few years now. And you've been kind enough to be a guest on, you know, this show a number of times, talking about your own experience. And I've watched you evolve over the years to where you're at now, an author, a coach. I mean, so many different things that have gone on in the last few years that I'm so proud of you. And
Thank you.
It's been a really great experience for you, finding your, what they call, purposeful connection, right?
Yeah, that's it. Finding that purposeful connection and finding my voice, the sound of my own voice. And just learning to just allow it to just lead me and keep me open. It has been such an adventure, and it's been so good.
And I think that, you know, as we get to know Suzette more and more over the upcoming, you know, months and years, that you'll be so inspired by her attitude of being tired of settling for what's not rightfully yours. And to go for something that's more important in your life so that you'll have what you've always wanted and not being afraid to take the steps to get there. And, in fact, I just wanted to mention to you, Suzette, I had a friend of mine who's coming into our, you know, healing weekend from Australia. Her name is Yasna, and I'm so excited about meeting her. And she sent me this poem today, and I told her I wanted to use it tonight because you were going to be on the show. And I just wanted to read it for a minute because it reminds me so much of you. And I want to see if it has a title. It's called Life. And it says, the adventure in life is to learn. The goal in life is to grow. The nature in life is to change. The challenge in life is to overcome. The essence in life is to care. The secret in life is to dare. The beauty in life is to give. The joy in life is to love. And that just reminded me so much of you.
Oh, my. I love that poem. Does she have a website where I can go get
it? No, I'll send it to you. Worry not. I'll put it right in the mail to you.
Oh, so, fantastic.
But it just reminded me so much of you, so I just wanted to read that poem. Because you are all about the joy of life, finding the right joy in life, not letting life get you down, and being able to move ahead in spite of the many obstacles. And if you don't mind telling people a little bit about yourself. I know our regular listeners have learned about you, but they always are happy to hear it again, and we always have new listeners.
Indeed. Hi, listeners. Again, I'm Suzette Newton, and I am a recovered straight wife. I'm not merely recovering. I have found that you really can be recovered as a straight wife, even if you do like I did, marry the person twice.
Uh-huh.
So those of you that feel like, you know, because a lot of times you can feel like, oh, my God, how could I have done this? Or how could I have stayed so long? Or how could this have happened? Oh, my God, we are so hard on ourselves. But whenever you feel like being hard on yourself, just remember, I did it twice. But I lived to tell about it, and now my life is so wonderful, y'all. I am loving and being loved by a fantastic man, and I am living my purpose. I found that nothing that's happened in my life, including being married to a gay husband, nothing is lost. Nothing is lost. So I am a survivor, and I'm recovered, and I just want you to know that that can be, you can be a survivor, and you can be recovered as well. So hold your head up and keep the faith and keep going.
Now, let's tell people how that second marriage happened, because a lot of people say, what? She married him again?
I know, right? Like, what? Insane? What?
Right, but, well, you know, it's not so unusual when you hear this story because of the fact that, let's talk a little bit about your background, that you're you're from the South, right?
Yes, Southern girl.
With that beautiful Southern accent there. And you grew up in a church community, correct?
Yes, very much so. A very rigid seat in tradition and doctrine. It was a holiness church, but it had some Pentecostal influence. So it was one of those churches where, really, in all honesty, there were more things that you could not do than things that you could do. So I spent most of my life repenting for all the things that I was ever discovering that I was doing wrong. And so it was quite... even though I enjoyed the worship experience itself, it was very charismatic, choir singing, hand clapping, you know, all that was great. But there was also that part that held my soul captive. And it's hard to believe that church, which is supposed to liberate your soul, could actually be a place that can imprison your soul, because you're trying to live up to a lot of ideals and ideologies that don't really resonate with you, so you find yourself constantly messing up. So I grew up in that kind of situation, and really when it came to relationships, the only thing that I was basically told was keep my legs closed and all men wanted one thing, and that one thing was sex. And so when I met my then husband, what made him stand out is he seemed to want more from me than that. He respected my talents, my gifts. I could talk to him. He would listen to me. And I didn't feel like I had to fight him off, or even if he was not doing anything more than kissing me or holding my hand, I didn't have to deal with the neighbors that told my mom I was either necking in the car or they saw me holding a guy's hand, and I would get the wrath of God and the whole church community on me, you know, for something that innocent and that simple. So affection with a man was not something that was hard. So when I think about that, I think to myself, why not marry somebody gay? Because it's almost like I was kind of set up very unconsciously. My parents really meant me well, and so did my church community. But it's actually because of my naivete and the rigidity with which I was raised, it really made me a pray for whether the person was gay or not. It was pray for a user, pray for an opportunist. And I'm not saying that all gay people are opportunists, not at all. But it just so happened he was an opportunist that happened to be gay. if that makes sense. So the second time that we got married, I had left the church that I was in at the time, and I was kind of in this transition space where, of course, we had a child together, so our child was going through a whole lot of emotional issues. And so I called him and said, hey, you need to spend some time with your son. He's really, you know, having a rough time with our separation and divorce. He started spending time with our son, and I was going through some transitions and some difficulties, and it started out with, you know, Suzette, what's wrong? You know, you don't have to tell me, but I just want you to know I'm here for you. And one thing led to another where after he constantly extended himself, at first it was like throw son out, shut door quick. But then the more that he kept, you know, kind of plugging in, I succumbed to it. I needed someone to talk to that seemed to understand me. And he seemed to understand me. And so we went back down the same path. And I actually thought he was changed. I didn't look at sexual orientation at the time. I thought sex was something that if you had an attraction to a man, you could get over it.
Uh-huh.
Or you could get delivered from it, you know. And so when he came back and he was more affectionate this time, he was more more sexual, more intimate at this time, I thought that he had truly changed, that he had truly, truly changed. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if he wants to make it up to me and our son, then what I owe it to him to let him at least try. Our son needs his father. If our family can be restored, it'd be a great testimony that God can and God will, you know.
And can
and
you
so,
tell me what year this was, Suzette, approximately?
It was in the I'm trying to think, the late 90s.
Okay.
The late
And, you know, 90s. Once again, growing up in a Christian home with all the Christian doctrine and all the prayer in church, you know, a change was something that people definitely feel is a possibility. It's not like it was like a one in a million shot. If someone had the willingness to change and somebody didn't want to be what was defined in the Bible as deviant and wrong and they did the right thing, right? They could change. And so it's not like you made a silly mistake. You truly believed in everything that your belief system had taught you.
Exactly, and I found that I still believe that people can change, but I think I have a broader and more mature belief about that than I had back then, because I still have Christian principles, and I still believe in God's transformative power. I just feel like at that particular time, I did not understand what being gay really meant and how it permeates not just a man's appendage or his genitalia, but his emotions.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Even there were points that even the second time around with my ex, I would reach toward him. If I even made any kind of advance from an affection standpoint, or even if it seemed like I was going to kiss him, he would jump and be uncomfortable just like I would, being a heterosexual woman, if a woman did that to me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He had that same reaction. And so I began to understand, because at first I took it personally and gave him a few choice words. But now I'm beginning to understand, oh, my God, this was as foreign to him and as uncomfortable. Me asking him to have sex with me asking him to kiss me intimately, my wanting to snuggle up next to him was as foreign to him as if one of my friends, one of my girlfriends, or a woman made that kind of advance toward me. And when I began to understand that kind of discomfort, I felt compassion, not for how he treated me, because that was wrong, but I felt an empathy for him as a person going through that. And so it was quite a learning experience the second time around. It was quite a learning experience. And it was very difficult, but I left. For the first time I left, it was running for the hill, scared, not looking back. Second time I was like, now, God, this time I want to open my eyes really wide. No denial, no naivete. I want to stare this thing in the face so that I will never be fooled by it again.
And so I just bring up something that you said, you know, because I don't think a lot of women get this, and not because, you know, they're not smart or they can't figure it out. It's just because sometimes it's just so hard to understand what you just said a moment ago. And I, yeah. You know, in fact, in the new book I have coming out, you know, I guess it should be out by the beginning of September. It's called Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things. And
yeah.
It's a book that all of our women have contributed, a lot of our, not all, many of our women contributed to. To show women red flags that when your husbands are in denial and saying, no, not me, you must be crazy. But some of the things they've said throughout the marriages that, you know, it seems like they've all gone to the school, the same school of lies. But the thing
yeah.
is that what I try to explain within that is the fact that this is not about sex. This is about who you are. And where many of our women think, well, they're willing to give up the whole marriage. They're willing to give up their children and the people they love all for having a penis. And it's just not about that. I mean, it's just like you said. Could you take your very best girlfriend and as much as you love her, sit and make love to her? And it would be like the same thing. You could be best friends with your husband, but he has the same feelings for you that you have for your best female friend. He doesn't look at you as somebody he has passion for or desire for. It's foreign to him. And even though they can do it for a while in the beginning, and some continue to do it very begrudgingly, or, you know, you always have this feeling that they're doing you a favor. I mean, they'll do it just to keep up the pretense because they don't want to have you thinking he must be gay. So, I mean, I think that women miss that point, that it has nothing to do with sex. It's who you are born. It's who you feel you are as a person. And no matter how much you love your wife, you can only love her as much as a gay man can love a woman. It's never the same kind of love as a straight man can show you. And now that you've met a wonderful man, I think you can address that, right?
I really can. It's very different. I used to think that because my ex-husband was such a passionate, and I say that in quotation marks, such a passionate lover, I thought that meant he was enjoying it. But then I realized that what I perceived as passion was merely the adrenaline that he had to force and psych himself up, scoop himself up, almost like you're racing the engine of a car when you're getting ready to do a drag race. He had to scoop himself up so just to be able to do it. So it came across like passion, but that's not what it was. And now that I have experienced genuine passion and genuine love from a man, I have felt the difference. I have felt the difference. It's not confined to the bedroom. It's this sense of being loved and being made love to outside the bedroom. It's in how he looks at you. It's how he gives you access to his body. I can put my feet on him and he'll caress my feet and kiss them without me having to announce, I'm getting ready to put my feet on you now, don't jump. Or I'm getting ready to, don't worry, I'm not going to kiss you on the lips. I'm just going to kiss you on the cheek as a thank you. I don't have to feel like I got to announce it or send him a memo so that he can have time to prepare. He won't be caught off guard and jump. With this man, he welcomed my presence. He welcomed my smell. My ex used to tell me that I carried an odor, and I later understood No, baby, that's what sex smells like, you know, and a man is turned on. A straight man is turned on by that from a woman. And so I'm beginning to understand so many things that I didn't understand before. This thing runs very deep, and I think that's why in our getting in recovering from it, there are layers. It's not a one stop, just because you leave, you're over it. There are layers that you have to recover from. And I learned that.
I would like to bring up something that I know may be a little painful for you, but, you know, part of what I feel your effectiveness is the fact that you're willing to share with people and let them know that you're human just like they are, and mm-hmm. that part of everything we have is, you know, it's based on growth and evolving, and that mistakes we've made in the past, you know, we try to change, and that's part of maturity and growing, because believe mm-hmm. me, I've made a million myself. But I was very moved when I was listening to your show with your son, and I was kind of blindsided by some of the things he said, because I wasn't mm-hmm. expecting them, I guess. Were you blindsided by any of his comments?
Some of them I was. I didn't realize what he was dealing with, the depth of what he was dealing with. I didn't realize it.
And the reason why I mentioned that is because one of my new initiatives this past 6 months, even though I had talked about it for a long time, but I really hadn't done anything worthwhile with it, was, you know, forming our group for adult children of gay fathers mm-hmm. and not realizing how many issues that they are actually facing that we were really blinded to because we just didn't even think about it. But now that I've started this group and been working with some of these wonderful people who really were the true victims here, because, you know, we have support for ourselves. The gay husbands have support for themselves. The children walked around cloaked in secrecy because they didn't want people to find out or know, or they felt mm-hmm. the embarrassment or shame, or they felt guilt, or they were the keepers of the secrets. And they are looking at life like, what are their relationships with people supposed to look like, because, you know, ours weren't even real. I mean, they mm-hmm. have so many issues to face right now. But one of the things that I found was really interesting with your son that, I don't know, of course, you know, this didn't come up on your show with the gay issue, but now that mm-hmm. this show is about the gay issue, you know, when he was talking about feeling angry a lot, do you think that part of it was directed because of the whole gay situation?
You know, I don't think so, per se, because during that time, let me think about that.
Because, you know, it wasn't just during that time that he was angry. He's been angry since then. And I still feel, like, I'm going to tell you some of the issues that the kids are dealing with, and maybe you can tell me if this strikes you as something that maybe your son is dealing with, because, as I mentioned earlier, I've now redone my, you know, website to include this, and I'll just read some of the issues that I mentioned. And they are painful. I mean, man, they're really painful as a parent. Because mm-hmm. I just feel so bad. I mean, I knew some of these as my own children were growing up. But first, you know, these are the issues that, you know, I'm not bringing these up. These are the issues that they've told me about. Establishing trust in their own relationships or future relationships with their partners due to ongoing secrets and lies while growing up. Low self-esteem because some of them were keepers of the secret. Living with guilt and feeling blame. We have a lot of kids like that. They knew because they saw stuff on the computer. And mm-hmm. yet, you know, they felt torn. Do they tell their mothers or don't they tell their mothers? Do they break up a marriage? Will it be their fault? These are the things they, you know, had to live with. Questioning of their own sexuality coming from a gay parent and whether or not mm-hmm. this has been passed down. I mean, the reality is gay is genetic. It's never isolated or by itself. Now they're worried. Is it going to happen to them? They're also worried, is it going to happen to their children if there is a gay gene? You know, they're worried mm-hmm. about their future generations. Anxiety mm-hmm. due to family problems between their parents in situations based on daily deceptions. You know, when we're living with these daily deceptions with our husbands, we're not acting in the same way as if we had a loving, supporting, nurturing husband. The abandonment issues when the gay parent moves to his new life, acceptance of their father's, you know, lifestyle and partners. I mean, these are things they have to, you know, that are realities for them. Fear of rejection in their relationships or marriages if the news comes out. They're afraid, well, maybe their spouse or their girlfriend or boyfriend won't want to go with them, wondering if it's going to happen to them. And questioning how many family problems that impacted their thinking was due to their gay father's perceptions and how much of it was reality-based. And as I say, these are real questions and fears that our children have to deal with as they're moving into adulthood and as they're, you know, having their own relationships, wondering, like one of our, you know, I'm not sure how you were mentioning a little bit about how your husband liked to move away from you because, you know, he found it something that wasn't really appealing to him. But when children look around and they're not quite, and they see their parents aren't lovey-dovey, they see that there's not affection there, they see there's no real passion between parents. You know, one young lady has recently said in the group, well, this is what I thought marriage should be, and, you know, my husband doesn't understand this. You know, he wants to be warm and hold me and hug me. And she said, this is not what I grew up thinking a relationship was about. You know, she says, I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to act. You know, I was just modeling my life after my parents' life. And I thought that was pretty sad, isn't it?
Yeah, and even as you were reading off some of those things that you had heard from kids, I think for my son it was the deception part. Not so much because his father was gay, but because there was this energy that always surrounded us of chaos. There was always this kind of chaos, kind of, and I don't know, I remember before his dad and I broke up and we were walking around the house, we weren't acting angry, we were able to talk to each other and all of that, but he knew we were going to break up. And I remember him throwing a pan or dropping a pan downstairs when he was trying to fix some food, and he just started sobbing. And we both ran to him and said, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong? He said, I can't stand it. And we said, why? Because, I mean, his dad and I were acting normal. I had made up my mind I was going to leave. But we weren't ones to walk around fussing and fighting and holding grudges. At least we didn't think so. And our son said, but the walls are screaming. And so I think that even though he didn't see a lot of us fighting, as a matter of fact, his dad had a great personality. So his dad and I were more like chums, more so than married partners. So, and his dad would show affection around with me for appearance's sake. So he
Don't you think kids know the truth, though? Don't you think kids can see through that?
I think they start, especially as they get older, I think they start receiving, but they don't know quite what to do with it. And I think that's where the anger and the confusion comes, because nobody has actually said, this is what's going on in the marriage.
So okay, so let me take it one step further, and not to, you know, put you in a painful place, but it's a place that all of us have been in. You know, when you think about it, and you think what you were like during that period of time with being frustrated, with being confused, with being angry yourself, with feeling that you've been duped again. Don't you feel that that made you into somebody who you really weren't either? And that's what your son was viewing. You, not the regular Suzette, but you, the angry and disappointed and, you know, deceived Suzette who now has to deal with this all over again. And maybe that, you know, that's not who you were, but that's what he was seeing.
You know, you've made a great point, because I've always looked at his anger associated with his dad and I breaking up. I didn't look at his anger as a result of living with me, though I was, though I felt like I was still able to be a great parent and a great mother to him. Still, I was constantly in a fight. I was constantly in a fight to survive.
Exactly.
A fight over custody issues. So I was constantly frustrated in a fight or worried or anxious.
And, the way I feel is that I was always working two jobs. I never had the quality time to give my children because, I always tell people, learn from my mistakes. Don't repeat my mistakes. Go and get child support. But not me. I was proud, and I said, that's okay. I can handle this myself. I'd rather work a second job. I'd rather work three jobs. And that's what I was doing. And I wasn't there to give my children, what they needed either. And I feel very guilty. Now, my children are both gone now, and I can't make up that time with them. But I think that they didn't see me as I wanted them to see me because I was so busy just trying to provide for them. So that's why I think a lot of things that affect our children that we're not even aware of, and it's painful because we love our children. There's nothing more important to us, to any mother, than their children. In 99.9% of the cases. And we always think, we're doing our best, and we are. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to have issues in spite of that. And that's what I'm bringing up. It's not like you're not a good mother or I wasn't a good mother, but we weren't the mothers that we would have been in different situations.
So true. I'm so glad you brought that up, Bonnie, because I had never seen it that way, so I was having all these ding ding aha moments while you were talking. A lot of that he may have gotten from me because I was constantly driven, going after things, and I was being fueled by my anger. And when he was describing that he felt like he needed that anger to be able to advance, to be able to be motivated, to achieve, that anger was something that fueled him. And I'm beginning to see the connection that both his father and I failed him in that regard. Both of us did.
Well, I don't think it's something where we can look at it and beat ourselves up over it because we were surviving. We were doing our best as mothers to provide the love that our children needed to get for both parents. We were trying our best to provide the material needs that they had, whether it's clothing, whether it's food, no matter what it was, they needed that. But in doing so, it pushed us over the top. I mean, I was exhausted. I don't know about you, but, I was very exhausted raising children and working. Literally, I was working full-time day, teaching at night, and then I had a part-time Saturday gig. And then just trying to coordinate babysitters, getting everything together. It was exhausting. I did not give my children the best of myself because I didn't even have the best of myself. And, that's something that I'll always regret, too. But once again, no matter how much we love them, don't ever think for a minute that this situation doesn't leave holes in their life, because it does, and not because we're trying to. We're trying to patch everything up.
Yeah,
but
we're trying.
I don't
to
think that we can really be ourselves totally during these, split-ups and break-ups and make-ups. I look at women who tell me, and I don't know if you find this, but, when they tell me, I'm crying, I'm on medication, I'm so sad. They're staying in their marriages, and they're trying to cope until their kids get older. And, they're like zombied out on medication because they're trying to just cope and take antidepressants. Now, this is how their child perceives them, that my mother's unhappy, that she's depressed, and ultimately they start blaming themselves. I must be doing something wrong. Because the mother isn't telling them the real reason why she's doing all of this. And don't you think that distorts their perceptions of who they are in this, as a child?
Most definitely. And a lot of times we think, because if they're younger children when all this is happening and they're being so loving and they're, they seem to be doing okay in school, and we keep them involved in extracurricular activities, we have their friends over, we try to have some normalcy in their lives. We think that because they are are smiling and laughing and appear quote-unquote normal, we think they've dodged a bullet, or we think that we are providing that for them. But wait till they hit teenage years. Whatever was broken, whatever things that they suppressed, whatever things that they thought they were okay because it was there, but they didn't think it had had that much of an impact. All that stuff comes out when those hormones start getting crazy. It comes out then. And we're wondering then, what happened to my child? What happened? Why is he or she so angry? Why are they, you know, doing this or not doing the other? And a lot of times that's when it comes out.
I really learned a lot from your son yesterday, Suzette. And when he was so openly honest, you know, the show wasn't yesterday, but I just listened to it yesterday. And when, you know, he was talking about how angry he was, and I was thinking back to when my daughter was younger and she was so angry and she was acting out, doing really bad things. I mean, you know, hurting other people. You know, she was a bully. She became, you know, someone who was angry. And, of course, she had her very sweet, wonderful side, too. But she was doing a lot of acting out. And, you know, when I have to look back in retrospect after working with these adult children of gay fathers, you know, I can see now where I was really off and really missing, you know, the target. Even though I did my best as a mother, you know, I'm looking back and I don't have regrets. You know, you do your best with what you have to work with. But you do have to recognize that if problems come about, that you have to address them and not just tuck them under the carpet and say, oh, well, they'll outgrow them, or, oh, they'll have to get over this. Just like people tell us, oh, well, you'll have to get over it. It doesn't work that way, right?
No, it doesn't work that way. And I'm so glad that you're bringing this part out because, like you say, a lot of times people will say, I'm staying for the children because my gay husband or my gay wife is a great parent. But when they're raised in that kind of unhealthy environment, regardless to whether they ever hear you say a cross word, regardless to whether you all go on family vacations, regardless, it's going to show up. It's going to show up because it would be abnormal for it not to show up.
Mm-hmm. No matter how much you think you're hiding it, right?
Exactly. It's no matter, because I really believe there's a spiritual component to things. I think that's why sometimes when a kid is adopted by another parent or, you know, another family, that they may have never known their father or never known their mother, but they start portraying some of the same attributes, having not even known them.
Uh-huh.
Or twins separated at birth, when they find each other, when they become older, they find out their hairstyles are similar.
Uh-huh.
Their color choices are similar. I think there is a spiritual DNA, a thread that goes through things, and there's energy. Everything is energy. So even if you think, I'm saying this to the listeners, even if you think that you're doing your children a service because of the way appearances look, trust the spiritual undertone of the energy is chaotic and crazy and dysfunctional. And it's going to show up in some way. So we have to choose what's healthy. Because I used to think, you know, I said, okay, if my child is going to be messed up no matter how I slice it, if he's going to have issues no matter how I slice it, I'd rather he have 10 issues as opposed to 50.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like sometimes you have to choose the lesser of two evils. It's like, okay, I know there's going to be issues. But if I stay in this, there are going to be more issues than if I leave this. That was a decision that I had to make. So even though my son had issues and he did describe them, I liked to, my leaving it when I did gave him at least some semblance of normalcy as he saw me becoming more recovered. And it taught him another way of dealing with issues. I would like to hope that his ability to deal with his anger, his ability to be open to finding out what was going on, was because he saw me become open. and tell myself the truth and watch me do it. I would like to think that.
And I think that's a very good point that you bring out, because I tell women all the time, you have to be role models to your children.
Yes.
And even though it's so difficult, and when I listened to your son, my heart was aching for him, my heart was aching for you. Because I think that he expressed some anger that you weren't expecting. And, you know, he was really out there telling how he felt. And I feel that even though he's met a wonderful woman, you know, who's helped with a lot of this, he still has some unresolved anger issues. And maybe it's because, you know, he's just not looking at the right things to be angry about. Maybe there are things like the things that I was talking about that children are dealing with that he doesn't want to deal with. You know, and maybe because we don't deal with this as, let's see, how having a gay parent affected this whole family unit. You know, how I wasn't myself, how you were affected by that, how you have issues that maybe you're afraid to express because, you know, I'm your mother and you don't want to say them to me. Maybe there are things that, you know, I've had thoughts about, but I'm afraid to say because I don't want to be like my father. You know, I think these are things that are, I know all kids have issues when their parents split up. But just like we have issues beyond normal divorce issues, these kids have issues beyond normal separation issues. And we may be mistaking it as separation and divorce, when, in fact, it's really all these other issues that come about from having a gay parent.
Yeah. You are so right, Bonnie. You are so right. And I think it's a call for all of us to more deeply examine, you know, our own lives and our children. And I'm grateful that my son started talking to someone professional to help through that. I'm glad that he's open to counseling and therapy, because a lot of black men are not. So the mere fact that he would be open to it, I'm grateful that he's doing something to address it.
Unfortunately, a lot of people are not going to be open like he is. And my concern is that if they don't find an outlet somewhere, that anger is going to stay within them and affect their own relationships and their children unless they're able to resolve it. And it's kind of like, you know, you can bury it and you can keep it down for a while. But, you know, I've seen women, and I'm sure you have too in your coaching, that, you know, anger is good. I mean, I always say anger is your way of fighting back for yourself. But if you don't get a hold of anger over time, that anger will turn to bitterness. And once it turns to bitterness, then it will destroy you. If you can't vent out the anger in a positive way so you can move past it. Do you agree with that as a coach?
I totally do, because I call that destructive anger. There's a difference between productive anger and destructive anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think destructive anger can become productive if we do the work, if we do tell ourselves the truth, if we do ask ourselves the hard questions, but most of all, if we do forgive, which means releasing ourselves and other people from any kind of debt that is owed, then destructive anger can become productive anger. You learn to do something productive with it. You learn to advocate. You learn to be that parent, stand up for your children, and hold yourself more accountable when you become a parent. But it becomes a choice. And a lot of our kids growing up, ultimately, and kids that might be listening to this show, you're going to have to make a choice of whether you want to have a chip on your shoulder, whether you want to be a victim, whether you want to whether you pride yourself on being detached or being whatever. Because one of the things that my son said that was very telling, and he didn't think about it in that moment, but I did. I was thinking to myself as I was listening to him talk about how there was a point he prided himself on being angry and being aloof and untouchable. He prided himself on being cold. He prided himself. And I'm thinking to myself, it was almost like watching Star Wars where Luke is fighting Darth Vader. If you don't deal with whatever that dark side is, you become the very person that you hate.
And I think that's so true.
He might not have ever had issues as far as his sexual orientation, but he would have issues still being emotionally unavailable.
Well, that's still true, too. And you know what? Even if he doesn't doubt his own sexual orientation, you know, he may feel very, you know, confident with it. Don't you think for a moment they're thinking, well, what if I have children? Do I have to worry about their sexual orientation? Is my dad going to be handing this down to my children? I mean, I'm telling you now that from the group that I've been working with, this is a concern. And whether we could brush it off and say, well, you know, you'll love your children no matter what, I mean, it's still a concern. And I think these are concerns that other kids don't normally have. And we have to recognize that in our children, they have concerns outside the norm of what other kids have.
True.
And we can't ignore them. I think we have to address it.
We do. We have to really, really. And I think they take their cue from us. If we're in denial and we don't address our own issues and we don't call a spade, or as the younger Van Sant says, call a thing a thing. If they grow up with parents that are living in denial, then it makes it even more difficult for them to really be honest with themselves and them to not adopt a lifestyle of living in denial as well.
Right, and everything just keeps getting pushed under a rug, and eventually something just starts boiling out, and I've just seen that, you know, if you can't discuss these things, then you're never going to get past them. And if you're not going to get past them, then you're going to have difficulties, no doubt, in your own relationships. It has
very
to
true.
Have an impact.
Yeah.
And do you think it has to impact it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if we think, especially those of us of the church persuasion that I grew up in, if we think that just merely taking them to church, letting them hear quote-unquote truth, even if they have a spiritual experience, it still doesn't mean that they're going to avoid this. And a lot of parents, you know, they leave it up to the school system or leave it up to whatever their spiritual worship is of choice. And they feel like they're going to take their kids, you know, I'll put my child in a great school or because I go to a great church where, quote, unquote, truth is preached. We think that somehow or another, these folk are going to be able to do something that we couldn't do. And you know what? I know it takes a village to raise a child, but we still are in denial if we think that our behavior is not the most important to our children.
And
I think that's so true. It's very true.
Because I think, you know, it's what I call, you know, the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act, just like you syndrome, which means that whatever they see going on in your life is going to be happening in their life. Our children have no other way to model themselves other than what they see going on in their home growing up. And that's why I tell women that if they see you're in a relationship where there's a lack of, you know, communication, a lack of affection, a lack of passion, you know, a lack of touching, you know, we're just cold and austere, that's what they're going to expect for themselves. And if you're willing, you know, to stay in a relationship that's abusive, look how many, they say that physical abuse, you know, with domestic violence, that 87% of people who are abusers were abused in their own life or saw their mothers being abused. And that's because it's learned behavior, you know, it's not cognitive thought, but it's learned behavior. So everything in life is learned behavior. That's what we learn from the situation we're in. And guess what? No matter how much we don't like it, and no matter how much we say my life's not going to be like that, in most cases we walk right back through the same door. Because
yeah.
It's the only thing we know, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. And it was something that you said in our conversation just off the air, how there's so much shame surrounding being in a gay, straight relationship, that so
mm-hmm.
many women out there that need help, they isolate and they try to fix it up because they are so ashamed themselves. Not only are their children ashamed, but they're ashamed to admit it. They don't want anybody to know. They don't want anybody to know they've been through it. And there needs to be, if there's such a word, a de-shaming of it, because we do need help. We
mm-hmm.
have to realize this happened to us, but it doesn't define who we are, and there is
mm-hmm.
no shame in it. It isn't like you are bad or tainted because your spouse decided to live in the closet or live in denial, and they invited you into that same closet with them. That's not your fault. And so I feel like I'm so glad that you're having shows like this, Bonnie, where people can hear those of us that say, listen, hey, yeah, I did this, but I'm also, I'm learning from it, I'm recovering from it, and I can offer and extend that help to you if you need a safe place.
Right. I just want to mention one thing that you were just saying, and this is, you know, from the beginning of the book that, you know, I told you is coming out, and
mm-hmm.
I start off by saying that in this country there are over 4 million women who were married to gay men. Throughout the world, there are millions of more women in this situation, especially in countries and cultures where homosexuality is discriminated against to the point of death. Even though the numbers are certainly high, each woman who travels this path feels extremely isolated, as if she is the only one in this situation. And why is it so isolating? Because no woman is celebrating the fact that the man she married for the rest of her life is out there pursuing other men. This is not a proud event where you send out announcements. It's one that's clothed in secrecy for fear of shame, blame, and accusations of stupidity. The stigma of gay may be changing in the world today, but the stigma of straight wife is way behind in acceptance and is not catching up at all. And I really believe that.
Oh, it's even true of, I can post something on Facebook about anything. But when I post that I'm going to be talking about straight gay situations, or that I'm recovered from it, or if I post a blog about it, it's almost like deer in the headlights, or it's almost like, you know, that silence. Where,
exactly.
Ooh. And so people are very uncomfortable. You know, we are beginning to embrace that people can love whoever they want to love. And for me, I'm not bashing any person who's gay or lesbian. That's why I wanted to make sure that I let them know I'm not saying that to be gay or to be lesbian means that you're an opportunist or means that you are a liar. I just said my husband happened to have character flaws. He had character flaws and happened to be gay. And so, you know, I think with us beginning to embrace people now, and it's slow going, but it's time for those of us that have gone through this to stand up and say, enough, we're not going to, now that we have come out of the closet, it's like, okay, husbands and wives have come out of the closet, and we're still living in it.
We're further back than they ever were in, and that's the problem. I know a lot of women feel that, you know, the men, when they come out, everybody's saying, hooray, hooray, and you're a hero, and, you know, you should be so proud of yourself. You know, there's a whole cheerleading team for gay men who come out, whether it was Jason Collins, you know, the basketball player,
everybody
now thought that he's a big hero. You know, these guys come out and they're heroes, and we're left feeling like we're, you know, people perceive us as what was wrong with you. And that's the truth. I mean, that's the reality for so many of our women.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I say it boldly, because people that know me, it's like, oh, we admire you, we admire you, admire you. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad that you do. And this is what happened, and I came through this. And, yes, I married him twice. I want them to know that there is no shame there and that, yes, I went through it, but this, I am the same person that you're admiring right now. I'm the same person. And so that's one of the reasons why I say it and I admit to it and I bring it up in conversation, because I don't want them to, oh, boy, you were stupid, you know, or you. I want you to know, hey, I was human, but I recovered, still living my life. But that's a part of my history that I embrace. I embrace that part of my history because all that helped to make me who I am.
And I think that's true. I look at myself and I see where I am today, and I feel that I like to take every negative experience and try to turn it into a positive experience. And for me, you know, having an ex-gay husband really made my life in the sense that I was able to reach out to others and, you know, really talk and really be able to help them out of the darkness. Whereas if I hadn't had this experience, I wouldn't even know about it. So I'm not saying that, you know, this is something that all of us should look forward to so we can help others, but I'm saying we don't have to take it and, you know, just make it a dark place in our life. We can say what we've learned from this, you know, what we've learned about honesty, about relationships, about what we want out of life, what we're willing to settle for, what we're not willing to settle for, you know, how we can move and move beyond this, how it makes us grow. So I think that, you know, there are always lessons to be learned. Certainly none of us would have picked this path to go on, but we're on it, not by choice, but we're on it. And through support with each other, we can get past it. And I know that one of the things, not to have to sit and promote you, but, you know, I feel the need to do that, is that, you know, Suzette is more than just, you know, my friend and somebody here to help us get, you know, with great conversations and wisdom. You know, she is a life coach, and she has a book out called The Sound of My Life. And, you know, we'll do little portions of it in our future shows, if that's okay with you, Suzette. You know, I want people to hear the sounds of your life and, you know, what it means as far as being able to take somebody who's been through the depths of despair and take that and move to a new, you know, spot in life. And you can't always be an island and do it yourself. And that's why some people need therapists, other people need coaches, because it's not therapy that's going to help them make that next step and move ahead. It's having a real game plan and having a, you know, cheerleading team along the way to give you direction and to be there to give you the support you need. And if that road isn't going in the right direction, at least to help you with navigating a different way to get to where you want to go. So having a coach is like having your own cheerleading team. It's like a combination up to me, like a counselor or somebody, a guidance person. And, you know, this is something that you do so well. So I want to give people, you know, once again, to get Suzette's book, you can go to Amazon.com, The Sound of My Life, and it will really start sounding out on yours. But also you can go to her website. Suzette, tell them your website.
It's purposeful-connections.com.
Yep, and there's a dash in between purposeful and connections. Or you can just go on my website at www.gayhusbands.com, and on the right-hand side, you'll certainly see a link to Suzette and her coaching and also to, you know, her website where you can see her book. And Suzette and I also have a friend in common that we would like to shout out to before we end our show tonight. We would like to say hi to Terry.
Hi,
hopefully. We're big fans of Terry, so hopefully you're listening, Terry. But I know that Suzette was recently on a show that Terry starts, you know, is helpful in producing, and that's the Anthony Johnson Show. And you had the opportunity to start to get to know Terry that way, as I did, because I'm a big fan of Anthony Johnson here in Philadelphia. And even though Terry's not in the area, she's certainly instrumental in getting that program on each week. So we both love Terry. So if you're listening, Terry, we love you.
We love you.
And Suzette will be my guest starting, you know, the first Monday of every month, starting this month. And, yeah, let's do the yay again. Ready?
Yay!
And also, one of the reasons why I'm having Suzette on, other than the fact that she's inspirational and a great coach and has great things to say, and I learned so much from her and love her, is because she's also a singer. And so in the future, we're going to have some songs that we can sing. We'll pick a theme song each time. How's that?
Oh, that sounds so much fun. Oh.
I know. So I would like to just end our show tonight, Suzette, with a song that, you know, I've played before on the show one time, and I really liked it, and it kind of reminds me of our women, giving them hope and inspiration. And I don't know if you're familiar with the song. It's a Beatles song called Blackbird. Have you heard this song?
I'd have to listen to it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and actually it was written by Paul McCartney, and it's called Blackbird. And it's referring to women, to African women or to, you know, black women in England, you know, as far as like a liberation song for them.
Yeah.
And that was the true meaning of it when Paul McCartney wrote it. So let's see if I can get the song on to end our night on a bright note.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings. Learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
I just love that song because to me it's a song of hope. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. And I think of that song, and I think of our women who are broken, but with people like you who can help coach them, you can teach them how to fly again, right?
Yes. As I was thinking about what we're saying about women, it's about getting free, y'all. If you're in closets and you're hiding out, and it's time for you to get free. It's time to come out of the closet. It's time for you, even if your spouse doesn't, it's time for you to come out of the closet.
Right, and that will be our theme for our next show. How's that? Ways to get out of the closet and take back your life.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we'll be expecting that, and we'll be doing that during the first week of September. Yep, the first week of September. That's right. It's only August, but that's right. We're just at the beginning. Suzette, I can't thank you enough for being part of the show on a regular basis.
So
I know our women will really learn from you, and they'll fly because of you, and I'm so grateful that you're doing it.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. I feel so honored to have been asked to do this, and I always love our conversation. I always love it.
Same here. And I want to say good night to all of our listeners, and I want to wish you a wonderful week. You know, feel good about you. There's plenty of support available. Just write to me at bonk@aol.com, or you can write to Suzette. We will help you along your way to find those broken wings and fly again. Right, Suzette?
Indeed, indeed.
All right, sweetie, I love you, and love to all of our listeners, and we'll be back again with you soon. Good night.
Good night.
Yay.